In our deep dive this week, we take a look at commodities. It's been a whirlwind across Brent crude, gold, copper, platinum, and everything in between. And we thought, why not bring in a specialist to take a look at some pricing as well? Because the valuations we think are out there in the market might not necessarily align with how the markets are playing out. And we're joined in studio, thankfully, by one of the best technical analysts we both know, myself and Simon included. Mushima Gama joins us. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
through.
You.
Thank you for joining
invite.
Us. What yeah. are we starting with?
Because you look at that chart, that's fancy stuff.
No, that's some fancy stuff. Yeah. I do a line, I do a horizontal line, and I do a trend line, and woo!
Look, you're doing good with those. So should I just...
Yeah.
All right, so, I mean, we all know gold has just been on one upward trend, right?
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, from the time, I was trying to see if I could put it on the monthly chart, but it will be a bit distorted. But this is the most important part I actually want to show you. So this trend line would then indicate the long-term overall bullish trend. And then when it comes to this, looking at these two trend lines over here, which supposed to be quite important in the sense that every time when they breach, they start a new bull phase. So they start a new bull phase. A new bull phase started there. And as you can see, we've just recently having breached that trend line that's tested more than three times. So we're practically in a new bull phase and could start another bull phase once this other trend line. So let me just zoom in to show you. Once this trend line is breached, and you can see we're literally probably just teetering on that trend line. So in other words, what this chart is telling us is if we've entered a new bull phase that will become an even steeper bull phase should it break out of this sideways pattern that's in, because it's been trading sideways between 2,485 and 2,280. So above that high, if you calculate how far it will go there, it will then potentially go to 2,690, which is about less than 10% down, about 8. So that's the potential move that could happen, and it could be quite a steep uptrend to that level.
It looks crazy that you'd think this is sort of an unrealistic number, but I'm looking at, based on where your trend line's sitting at around 2,480-ish mm-hmm. or 2,484, and where we are now, I mean, at 2,463, this could happen this week at this rate. It's Tuesday, or it's Friday now, yeah. But this could happen closing out
with,
next week.
You know, the fact that, okay, interest rates were unchanged in the US, but there is that anticipation. We're getting to fourth quarter already, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
mm-hmm.
And then there will be a cut, and that bodes well for gold. So either probably there's that anticipation of that steep upside towards that level.
Why did gold spend so long in that consolidation kind of space? I mean, anything between, and you can probably say between $2,000 an ounce and $2,400, it kind of went sideways for a long time when there was a lot of uncertainty. And
yes.
Typically when there's uncertainty, you know, safe haven, you know,
exactly,
gold becomes
yeah.
the favor. But
yeah.
this time around, I suppose with the US dollar having its returns or having its returns boosted by the elevated interest rates, gold wasn't as in favor as we thought it would.
No, it wouldn't, because, I mean, it's better to be in interest-bearing assets, right?
Mm.
If the interest rate is going up. But if they're going to cut, then it means your pocket is going to be cut. And what would you rather get into? And because of that, the whole, they're going to be taking money out of interest-bearing into something. So it has to go to either gold or equities.
Mm.
So that's why I think, you know, the cut itself will bode well for gold shares as well as equities. So we're just kind of waiting for that. And you can tell with the type of momentum with these rising bottoms forming up there that there's already gradual buying upside. And once it just breaches that, which all-time high is effectively at 2,485.
Mm.
So breaching that is just going to, as I said, showing these, you know, these little circles I was drawing and the trend line is just... That for me, it just gives me an indication of the type of celerity it will be. And if it has, I mean, this says from April, it's just been meandering.
Mm.
And now once it gets out of that consolidation, that's when we could just see that rise.
Yeah.
So you just kind of want to be in gold shares of some sort.
No,
gold
you do. Commodity. And these things, yeah. And I just look globally, the average all-in sustained cost for gold miners is $1,276. This is an EY report from earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
1,276.
Yeah, so let's call it 1,300. And in South Africa, it's about that. Although the new Pan African mine, I think, is coming on at 950.
Mm.
But these guys are making, I mean, every...
They're making 100%.
They make, and if it goes to...
1,300 to 2,600.
2,690.
Yeah.
They're making 50% gross margins. It is
on the same... On the same production. They don't have to increase production. They don't have to adjust their system. Exactly the same production is just higher demand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I just want to point out something that's just going to be quite important as well, because I'm looking at the weekly chart on gold, right? And this is pretty much a symmetrical triangle. Once it breaches that, which it hasn't been since April again, That itself is just a call for buyers. It's to push it up. And gold has a tendency to remain in that overbought territory for an extended period. So that's why I'm just like, if you just put a long at 2,485, you're going to be good.
Do you think we'll get a pullback before we move on?
You could be correct in the sense that this particular trend line was curbing a lot of that upside. And if at all that's the case, it will just remain in that sideways band. But you need to keep this level, you know, in some kind of position, because once it is breached, that's when we could see. Because there's two factors. We're kind of waiting for a breakout based on a couple of reasons, and they all are bullish reasons.
No resistance beyond that.
That's it. That's why we had to kind of get a calculation from the sideways pattern where it's likely to go.
2,280. I see that's probably the low end of that range, or that consolidation range that it's been sitting in.
Yeah. And with these rising, unless something terribly happens, that 2,280, once breached, that would mark some downside.
So that's our downside panic table.
Which is unlikely. If you think about all the things that are happening out there at the moment, and we're going to jump to the Middle East now, oil prices you'd think would be affected by Middle East tensions, but the OPEC bloc has been very, very clear around controlling that price following, I think it was April of 2020, that crash.
Yeah.
That big oil dip down where futures went negative for the first time in history and we all freaked out. And I remember at that time, I got so many phone calls from people saying, what do we do? We're holding Sasol. What do we do? And I remember the Sasol share price came down to, I think, 20 Rand or something. I said, buy as much as you can afford to. Buy as much as humanly possible, because the reality is if 80% of the world still uses fossil fuels, we're not going to disappear from oil overnight, you know? And since then, OPEC was like, we are not going to let this happen.
Sasol's a one-stop shop. It's going to be a one-stop shop soon, you know? So.
And that consolidation's been since about April. So the reporting season we're seeing from gold miners coming through now, some of it will be at the lower levels depending. But
the next cycle is going to be the 2021 super cycle levels.
Yeah, the 25 where results paying, coming through are going to be staggering.
Yeah, especially if this continues. Let's jump to oil.
Let's see oil quickly.
Let's see what it looks like.
Which one did I use? Sorry, there's so many of these.
This is what happens when you're an analyst. You've got so many different charts and things and you've got your levels on one. And beautiful thing about the software, about the TradingView software, is you can actually save what you've been looking at. And I think that's one of the things I enjoy about it. But I suppose, Simon, you've got the Coifin one. Equally.
Yeah, and actually I also just use my broker. They've got an Iris as well. I've got a trading view, but I use it for the watch list on the side.
It's pretty useful.
It's just a quick look. So, Brent, to your point.
There's a lot of numbers on this one.
The Brent chart, we'll get to Mashima in a moment, basically tells me two things. A, global growth isn't as smart as we think it is. Mm-hmm. And B, Russia is selling as much oil as they can to China and India, who are therefore not buying oil from the OPEC majors.
I was just going to say, because in as much as we're seeing this, the China story has always been the driving factor behind it, right? Chinese demand has always been what's driven global markets, movements and everything, because they're still one of the fastest growing, if not the fastest growing, emerging markets. So if they slow down, then everything else is slowing down. But what you're raising about the Russia thing is interesting, because I remember Prime Minister Modi coming out and saying, I'm going to buy oil from wherever I can get it from. Yeah. I'm not going to sanctions for what?
Yeah. And Xi Jinping don't care either. He just wants oil. And Russia.
When have the Chinese listened to anything the Americans have said?
They just like do the opposite.
Exactly. They're like, okay, we're going to not do that.
So where does oil go next? Is it going to...
So the thing about this, what the chart is showing me is that it's completely gotten out of its long-term bear trend, as you may see. But also, this type of movement, this type of upside is always not sustainable.
Yeah, that was the invasion, right? Yeah, that was February 20,
February 22. Which is obviously now fizzled out quite a little, but it hasn't fizzled out to an extent that it's returned back into its bear trend. So it's in this huge, really boring consolidation, if I could just zoom that in. So it's in this huge, boring consolidation, and so is its RSI, where these are the two trend lines that are really curbing either upside or downside movement. But at least you've got these kind of levels that will give you an indication of once it breaks through 92, that's when we could see the target for that. It would actually be at 113, which is the base of that symmetrical triangle. But if it breaks the lower end and trades below 71, it could then return back into its bear trend to 50.
Whoa.
So what I know about oil from the little I've been listening to the OPEC bloc discuss, $80 is too low for them. They refuse to go below $80 because they don't like that level. The reality is they can price at a dollar, but they feel that $80 is too low, but the market feels that $100 is too much. Mm-hmm. So it's this tug of war.
It's a tug of war, yeah.
It is, right? They're saying,
and
well...
it's, I mean, it's indicative with this particular pattern forming, because symmetrical triangles are a tug of war between, you know...
And the price cuts. I mean, every time you see the price getting to a point where everybody might say, oh, it's too expensive, they're like, no, don't worry, we'll cut prices, or we'll do this, or we'll put more supply in. And it's interesting that a block like OPEC can overnight change the landscape. They can have a meeting on a Sunday and say, we are cutting 3, 4, 5, 6 million barrels per day. This is exactly when we will do it. And the market will be like, oh, okay. There's no resistance. There's no feedback. There's no negotiation. There's no discussion. And even with the US, I remember, I think it was it last year or towards the end of last year, where the US had thought that the supply they had would be able to offset against the cuts that happened, and that's not the case.
It's just the correlation sometimes just changes all the time. You think it's correlated to that, and then all of a sudden it's not. And I guess that's why I enjoy charts, because they they will just tell me what it is.
They make sense. Yeah. They don't listen to Donald Trump. They make sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like you say, there is that tug of war, but we're going to, I don't know, effectively it's out of its bear trend. So it could potentially breach the 92. But yeah, the RSI has to follow suit with that. Otherwise, we're just going to be in that sideways band between these two levels until it reaches the apex. So yeah, that's what we should at least be anticipating. And it's a huge range at this point. If I took support there, it would be 76. It would range between $76 and what's that high there? And 80, let's say 88. 76 and 88 is the tightest range band until it actually reaches the apex where it would have to break upwards or downwards.
How much of this is down to where Chinese demand will start to kick in? Because we are expecting at some point that the Chinese economy might recover, or it might not. But when that does take place, obviously that's going to spur on global demand, and that's going to have a bigger impact there. Are we thinking that until that happens, we could realistically stay inside this channel? We've got no reason. I can't think of a reason to move out.
Yeah. Mm. Nothing really, very monotonous sideways band, but out of its bear trend, that is, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, we just have to wait for a breakout at this point. You can't try and outsmart this unless you're sculpting, but.
Yeah. But also all I know about oil is it impacts my petrol price. And I don't even use much petrol.
So don't get me started.
I like oil when it's
don't get me started on that conversation. the oil price should not be impacting the petrol price the way it does in South Africa. And that's because at some point we used to have 6 operational refineries. We used to refine our own fuel. We used to import less than 50% of our oil. Last stats I checked, we were importing 80% of our finished petroleum because we closed down our refineries. There's one group of people that is responsible for that. We won't get into that because they now own PetroSA.
Do we even know what the calculation for our petrol is?
So weirdly, they use the Singaporean benchmark.
Yes, 40% of it is levies.
Yeah, so it's levies.
The rest of it doesn't matter.
But the benchmark,
that's a huge
chunk. That's a huge amount.
The benchmark price is some price point out of Singapore.
Mm.
I don't know why Singapore. Singapore.
Supposedly neutral?
Well,
I don't know.
It was something because of how they refined their... Yeah, anyway.
We'll figure it out. Let's move to copper, because that's another big thing. Copper's been one of those... Oh, EVs. Yay, copper. No EVs. Oh, boo, copper.
Also, NVIDIA chips. Those NVIDIA chips.
That's it. NVIDIA chip. And then BHP's like, no, we're going to buy Anglo. And they're like, yay, copper. And they're like, no, we're buying another copper mine. Oh.
Yeah.
Never know what's happening. But apparently, copper's a hugely popular thing.
Well, I mean, the charts are saying there is demand, though. This is a huge band that's been trading in. And between that 11,100 and 6,900. So just judging from this, it's pulling back. Of course, it was extremely overbought, but it may just hold at that 8,860 mark and then continue with its uptrend. It's on an uptrend. It's just a correction within the bull trend that's happening. One would say this is probably the best time to start buying, because you'd be buying at the low, because it always kind of bounces on that support trend line. So these are good buying levels for potential. And this could also be seen as a wedge or a flat. Well, not necessarily a flat, but a wedge of some sort. So this could be the time to buy. With a stop loss still kind of being slightly below this level, just in case it breaches. But this has held since 2020.
Sure. It's Simon's favorite chart. It starts on the bottom left of the screen and goes to the top right of the screen. And I like, and it looks good. It really does.
The copper story is, so it's EVs, but it's also electrification. And I forget the number, but like the world has to spend about a couple of trillion dollars on electrification. Mm. And that's not just renewable, which it is in part. Mm. It's also, I mean, we talk about our Eskom fleet is old. Electrical fleets the world over are old. Data centers consume huge amounts. I mean, Microsoft wants to put small little pebble bed nuclear power plants next to their data centers. This is all about copper. Copper and copper is your best conductor of electricity. That's just the periodic table. You can't argue with that.
Do you know what's interesting about the copper space for me is I see the levels, I see the uptrend and all of that. But copper's almost 90% reusable. So
correct.
For a lot of things.
Right? And for something that has more use than a gold or something else. You know, a gold you melt down or whatever, you put it into a finished product, it is what it is. You can recycle copper. Mm. Almost all of it, and yet the price is still evident of the fact that it's in demand. There is a lot of, but it speaks to your point.
Compared to gold,
it is. It speaks to your point, Si, about the fact that there's that much of it that's in use or that's in demand that even at $8,000 a ton, it is something people are willing to go into.
And the recyclability. I mean, the point is that, you know, Kuberg has got I don't know how many tons of copper, and that thing's been there since the 70s. So it's recyclable. But when copper, so when it goes into a vehicle, which is a modest amount, it's there and it can get recycled, and maybe within a decade or two. Maybe the same with chips. But in terms of electrical supply, it goes into the ground, it goes in, and it is now there for decades and decades. Mm. There was a time when I ran the numbers, and Telkom's holding of their copper was worth more than the market cap of the company. The trick was pulling those cables out of the ground one by one. Mm. But yeah. So it is infinitely that stainless steel. I mean, stainless steel even more, which is chrome, which is the PGM guys are suddenly all excited about chrome.
Well, everybody seems to be optimistic about this Transnet getting their ducks in a row. I remember chatting to ArcelorMittal this week as well. Their CEO said that they were optimistic as well that Transnet had finally figured out their lives and things were going to go back to some form of normal. But that's for South African miners, and that's a story for another day, because unfortunately we've run out of time. This is always the problem with our segment, is we never have enough time. Mushima, thank you so much for coming through and for joining us. We're definitely going to have you back on because we like the pictures. The pictures look very pretty. There's a lot to go on here. But that's all we have time for this week.